My name's Sam, and this is Pilgrim Pit Stop, a podcast about following Jesus through life's highs and lows. Most of the episodes are conversations about following this incredible, demanding, forgiving man. Some are adventures I've had following him, and others are reflections on the Bible, faith, and spirituality. Why not subscribe and join me on the journey? Here's a little clip of what's coming up in today's episode.
That hope in people's faces is an important reflection for me of the promise of Easter.
All right, let's go. Hello, welcome back to Pilgrim Pit Stop and to this Easter edition of the podcast. I'm just going for a walk in the beautiful Downs, which is a part of Bristol in the southwest of England, and it's a stunning day today. The sun is shining and it feels like a good time to be introducing this Easter special, which was just a wonderful conversation that I recorded with a very inspirational person. I'm not going to sort of say actually too much about it, other than that it was a chat that we had on the 15th of February 2021, and but I kind of want to just let it speak for itself. So without further ado, here is that conversation for this Easter special.
Jane Held. I'm the assistant curate, or one of the assistant curates, at the Blythe Valley Teen Ministry and Cluster, which is a cluster of 14 churches round a market town in very rural Suffolk.
Fantastic. And for those who don't know Halesworth as a place and kind of the surrounding area, could you paint a bit of a picture? What kind of community are we talking about here?
It's a lovely part of the world. It really is lovely. It is very rural. It seems like the land that time forgot occasionally. We're very close to the coast, which is lovely. The community is more mixed than people think. We do have a very high number of people over 84, one of the highest in the country, because lots and lots of people come here for their holidays or their adult life and then retire here. But we also have a lot of families. We do have some social housing. We have a very mixed community of sort of 20, 30, 40, 50 year olds. It's very, very rural. So the town is just over 4,000 people. Some people call that a big village, but we think it's a very big town. And then we have the villages in my cluster. Two of the churches are in villages of less than 50 houses. And some of those are 50% holiday homes. So there are very few people in some of the villages. They're very spread out, very isolated. Rural poverty is a real issue, very significant and very hidden, because we also have a very wide range of incomes. We have a lot of people with an awful lot of money who, you know, what we call old money, who live here and have lived here all their lives and are very, very well off. We have a very arty community, a very eco-friendly community, a lot of eco-initiatives, lots of gardening societies, and a real care for the environment and for the arts and for drama and for song and music, which makes it a very mixed and a very lively place, considering where it's located.
Mm. And then to tell me a bit about some of these community projects that have sprung up over the... Well, actually, it might be useful to know, was some of this stuff happening before the pandemic? Okay. And then maybe kind of paint a bit of a picture of what's changed since the pandemic.
It would be fair to say that in the villages, most of the churches have had a profile with their own communities for a long time. But it has been an inward-looking profile. It's about the church being the village church, mm-hmm. where you get married and you get christened and you get buried, and they have a fete every year. And, you know, there's a routine to the year. So those communities have been very patterned for a very long time, and haven't needed a lot of organization, because the village themselves looks after themselves and have got good unbelievably good communications network. Sometimes the gossip goes faster than I can drive. So they're very self-sufficient, or they were very self-sufficient as communities. That's changed a little in the last 5 years, because a lot of older people have died and people have moved in and are less used to that self-contained village life. So that's put some tensions into our village communities, which they're not negative tensions, but they're changing the nature of that self-sufficiency. So there are some isolated people who 10 years ago people would have kept an eye on them, but they don't know. Town is very different. The church for some considerable period of time was not part of town. There were some very fixed voluntary organizations who did what they did. They did what it said on the tin. So the community cars drove people to and from their appointments. The hopper bus took people shopping. Hales with Dementia Carers did exactly what it said. The day centre provided 2 lunch meals a week for older people. And it ticked along. But it ticked along. It wasn't lively and thriving in that voluntary sector community. And there was quite a lot of separation and indeed competition between different organisations. Pandemic just changed all of that overnight. I suppose we were very lucky because we convened a meeting, I think, 3 days before lockdown, because we could kind of see the writing on the wall. So I suggested with somebody else, the manager of the volunteer centre, that we convened a meeting of all the volunteer organisations, plus the town council, plus the business community, to talk about how we could work together in something like a lockdown. And people got together, and that kind of flicked a switch for people. I don't know what led me to think it was a good idea, other than I suppose I felt like if we're all running around like headless chickens, we may as well run around as one chicken rather than 20. So, and you know, it was one of those God moments where it could have been a complete disaster, and it wasn't. It was really constructive. And that led to an absolute flowering of ideas and willingness to work together. So the volunteer centre became the community hub. It helps. My partner is actually the manager of the volunteer centre, so we can do business over breakfast, which is, and sometimes over supper. It's a bit of a rule, we don't talk work at supper. So that helped, you know, us bring the gifts that we could bring to the party into one place. But they became the coordination centre. So they've recruited all the volunteers for all the projects that have flourished. They ensure them. I do the safeguarding training for them all because that's my background. And then the different things have happened. So the day centre's had to close, but we've been able to use the kitchen, which has been really good. The volunteer centre has been doing shopping runs and prescription runs, and they now do an average, I think, of 50 shopping runs a week out to all the villages as well as to people in the towns. And they pick up prescriptions for about 70 or 80 people and drop them off because people can't get into town because they're shielding or isolated. They are running, they keep their project called Isolation Busters going, which is a project where people are matched with people and they either chat on the phone or they, you know, see them over the garden fence or they walk their dog or lots of things. So you've got a friend.
Yeah.
They're running the gift project, which is done jointly with the church. And every so often we take out gifts to people just to brighten their day a bit. So we had cake o'clock for several weekends where bags of cake and, you know, cream teas were taken out last Sunday, but one was Super Saturday. So we took out soup and croutons. And so in a way, there's that sort of sense of we're caring for each other in our community by social interaction, even if it is at a distance through a mask. So those are really doing very, very well. The Hopper bus, working with the volunteer centre, has provided the free transport to the vaccination centre, which is 14 miles away, and you can't get there on public transport. So we've been getting the priority people over there. I'm not a community car driver. I haven't volunteered to drive my car, but I do pick up prescriptions and, you know, do some shopping runs. And I'm the person that I get the sudden phone call saying, Jane, everybody else is busy. Can you do it? So I'm a volunteer with a volunteer centre. But it is really interesting. We have a coordination meeting once a fortnight with the town council, the volunteer community led by the manager at the HVC, the church led by me, and the county council, where we look at what's going on and what else can we do and how can we do it. So the town council have been funding a voucher scheme for fresh fruit and vegetables and meat for people who are struggling. We've always had the food bank. We've hosted the food bank for years, but the food bank volunteers had to go, all of them were having to shield in first lockdown. So suddenly we had to run the food bank with a group of people who had no idea what we were doing, other than I knew where the cupboard was and how to unlock it. So we started the food bank operating in lockdown in a very different way. So we were delivering out to people. And at the same time, we were discovering that the so-called Boris boxes were being delivered in a very weird way, very random. Some very high priority, very needy people were getting nothing and were obviously not on any lists. Some very wealthy people were getting Boris boxes because they were on lists because of their age. The content of the Boris boxes was dreadful in terms of both quality and nutritional balance. So we started getting phone calls saying, can we donate something to the food bank? And we started getting all these things from the Boris boxes. And so the group of us that were helping at the food bank were sort of chatting about this and thinking, well, can we not do this slightly differently? So we decided that what we do is start putting surplus stuff from the Boris boxes and other things out as a sort of open access, rather than you have to have a voucher, you have to answer loads of questions, you have to, you know, ring up and get it, you have to be this, you have to be that, you have to fall into certain brackets, which is what happens with the food bank. And can we not use this for people who don't meet those criteria or who really, really don't want the stigma of having to ring up for a voucher every week and be, you know, examined about your background and why have you still not got your benefit and, you know, questions like that. It's done nicely. It's not done nastily, but it's just those hoops that people have to go through. And you understand why. I can really understand why. The theory is that they don't want to develop dependence, which is great in a community setting where people can get themselves back out of a troubled place. But if they can't, the food bank is a very limited option for them. And that's where the community larder was born, from those conversations about how we do it differently.
Wow. And what are there any kind of stories that stand out, particularly if you're looking back on the past sort of, I guess, is it sort of coming up to a year now almost of the community
almost
larder?
A year when we first started the idea. There are many, many, many stories. There are some lovely stories, actually. The one that I always tell, because it's the one that had me in tears for about an hour afterwards, couldn't stop sobbing, it was dreadful, was we had a very, very vulnerable lady who was using the food bank, didn't come every week, was clearly really very anxious, hated. She always turned up either very early or very late, so nobody else was around. Very shy. She started to get to know us a bit and got a bit chattier. And then the community larder started. So we started giving her a hand and helping her choose food and not having to go through hoops and all the rest of it. And after about 4 months, she came and gave me, she said, here, Jane, I want to give you a donation. So I said, oh, that's nice. Thinking she'd give me something, because the larder works on a bring and give. Thinking she'd give me a bottle of, you know, tomato sauce, spaghetti sauce, or, you know, pasta sauce, because we get lots of that recycled. And she gave me a £10 note. So I just looked at her thinking, where the hell did she get that from? And she said, it's my birthday money. My mum gave it to me and I wanted you to have it because you've been so good to me for the last, not me, but the larder had been so good to her for the last few months. So that just completely reduced me to smithereens, really, because that was a very big deal for her. £10 was a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah.
And you know, the real widow's mite thing. Sort of,
yeah.
You know. But, and I knew that that bursary money, she could have bought a treat for her dog or a warmer coat or something like that. But no, she wanted it to go to the larder, and it did. We've a number of people. We have, bless him, guy whose life is a bit of a mess, and he struggles a lot. He's got learning difficulties. His functional age, he's in his 40s, but his functional age is around about 12. Doesn't read, doesn't write. Copes just, not very much liked by the town, because he hangs around a lot because he's got bugger all to do. You can edit that word out. he's got very little to do in the town, but he hangs around and he is addicted to scratch cards. So any spare bit of money goes to scratch cards. Early on in the lockdown, we knew he was getting cuckooed. So we had to get the police in to move people who'd moved in and you know, were exploiting him very badly.
Sorry.
Sorry, Alexa. I've set Alexa off.
All right.
he'd been banned from the food bank because somebody had said, oh, well, you just keep coming in, you're not trying to sort yourself out. And so he lost his rag, bless him. So we started to engage with him. He is a bit of a ligger because he doesn't know any better. He does take advantage and he can be taken advantage of, so we have to be quite controlling of what he's given, because we know otherwise people will be wanting to come and get stuff for them that he can flog onto them or just give them, and they're not in any form of need and don't want to be part of the system. So he's been a bit of a struggle, but what we've discovered is he likes helping. So now if we've got a lot to lug, we can get him in, and that's his way of giving back. So he likes to lug boxes around or help me move chairs in church. So that's another story. We've got a very posh lady who had a good job, was furloughed and then made redundant in lockdown one, got another job and then was furloughed again and then made redundant again. Life was pretty tough for a single woman. So she was very embarrassed and came to the larder. And we gave her stuff, and then she said, would you like some eggs? Because I've got chickens. So she started bringing eggs, and then she said, do you like fresh baking? So we said, yes. She said, oh, I love baking. So we now give her, when she comes for her stuff, we give her baking goods. And she bakes cakes and biscuits and flapjack and things and brings them back to the larder for other people to use.
Amazing.
So it's lovely. It's absolutely, and it's lots of little things like that. So you'll get a family who've had, and we've got about 8 or 9 families that are really big, couple with 8, 9 kids, really. And they come for a while, then they disappear, then they come back when they're short of money again. But they always bring something with them, even if it is that tin of pasta sauce, that jar of pasta sauce that they got in their food box that they're never going to eat. And so they can start off the arrival by saying, here, I've given you something. Then they can take food and feel good about it.
Yeah. And it's no questions asked, you know, if someone wants to just come and just take, there's no
people
question.
Just arrive. Yeah. We take a head count. We have to take a contact number because of COVID and a name, but we ask absolutely no questions, nothing about age, nothing about circumstances, nothing about income. People volunteer, they get to know us, they chat to us. Because it's a bring and donate, as well as a bring and take, as well as a take arrangement, lots of people come for a social chat and to drop something off. And some of our older residents, particularly some of our very frail older residents who would not want to go to the co-op because it's too bustly and busy, and we only have one person in the larder at a time, they come along for a social chat and a shop. And then they always give us huge amounts of money for small shopping. So they feel good. We feel good. They take their shopping home. They've kept themselves safe. They've had a bit of a social chat and a good engagement. They have a bit of a chit chat with their mates outside, socially distanced. And that's their, you know, interaction for the day. And that works really well too. Yeah. So that mutuality and participatory aspect is really important. And it's, there is something in it for me about human beings caring for each other as God would want us to, that model that Christ set us, where, you know, you care for others, you serve others. And if you do that in the right way, they'll serve you. And that's part of the richness of God's creation and Jesus's expectation of each other.
Yeah.
So, you know, it feels a far more Christian way of being with our community than anything else I've been involved in, because we're not making judgment. We're not asking questions. We're not sitting deciding who can and who can't. We have no moral value exercised of any sort. We just expect people to look after each other.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe linked to that, sort of linked to some of the stuff you've been talking about, I was wondering if you had any kind of reflections on Easter. This episode will go out very close to Easter Day. Yeah. And I was just wondering if you had any kind of reflections on the Easter story, especially after the last year that we've had and how challenging it's been for people.
I suppose three things, really. One is the resurrection was such a shock to people that the impact of it was long and slow. So the Easter story, that story of, you know, the resurrection, we have life after death, we have a promise, took hundreds of years to shape into people understanding what that was really about. And I think that's my biggest reflection about this Easter, really, is hopefully by this Easter we'll be able to see some of that, you know, hope and promise in the future coming into our lives. But the impact of this period of trauma and penance and pain for people will take a long time to work through. And we don't quite know where it'll take us. But what I do know is that there is a promise it will always be okay at the end. And Easter gives us that joy, gives us that promise. And I see that. You can see the sense of hope in people's eyes when, instead of being asked, where's your benefit? Why are you not able to get your own food this week? They're just, so what would you like? Would you like, well, we've got some fresh milk this week. Would you, that sense of, oh, it's okay. This is okay. People are, that hope in people's faces is an important reflection for me of the promise of Easter and the promise of Christ's death and resurrection. That's what he died for.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much, Jane.
You're welcome.
Honestly, it's a pleasure to kind of hear from you and to hear what you're doing. Yeah, that was my conversation with Jane Held, and just a brilliant chance to hear about the work that she's part of and that the community in Halesworth are part of. So I'm going to leave a link in the description to the Volunteer Centre, where you can find out some more about the amazing work that they are doing. Brilliant. Well, that's all for today, folks. Thanks so much for listening. Happy Easter to you. And as always, many thanks to Johnny Davies for creating the wonderful theme music to this podcast, and to Thomas Thorogood for creating the jingles. God bless, folks. I'll speak to you in 2 weeks' time. But until then, stay safe, stay well, and enjoy the sunshine. Bye-bye.